above the Diamantina. A human story from Northwest Queensland. Detective Inspector Napoleon Bonaparte, after his arrival at the Coolabah homestead, lost no time in questioning the members of the household, but up to the present he has not received any information of value. He has decided to spend a day or two in the stockman's hut at Faraway Bore, some 8 miles from where the stolen aeroplane was found by John Nettlefold. The Nettlefolds and their guests have just finished dinner. John Nettlefold has gone out to bring his car to the front door. Elizabeth and Dr. Knowles are visiting the paralyzed girl, and Bonaparte is left alone in the lounge with Ted Sharp.
Well, Mr. Sharp, I think we can rely upon you to look after the homestead whilst we are away.
That's why Mr. Nettlefold gave me the job.
Oh, please do not think that I am meddling in Mr. Nettlefold's concerns. I was merely recalling how quick you were with that revolver when we met upstairs.
I have already apologized about that.
My dear Mr. Sharp, I am not resenting the fact. I'm very impressed, as a matter of fact, with your alertness.
Thanks.
I understand that you have been on Coolabah for 11 years. Without a doubt, your position here enabled you to have a clearer insight into the characters of the men than Mr. Nettlefold has.
Maybe.
Is there a man, do you think, who would poison a helpless woman's brandy if he were offered, let us say, £1,000?
No. I'm sure there isn't. Poisoning is a filthy thing.
Yes, I agree with you. It is far worse than killing with a gun. I am told that on the night the aeroplane was destroyed by fire, you were out at Faraway Bore with Ned Hamlin and the two blacks, Bill Sykes and Shuteye.
That's right.
How far would that hut be from Emu Lake, as the crow is alleged to fly?
Oh, about 8 miles. A little less, if anything.
To the north of Faraway, on the main Golden Dawn St. Albans Road, there is a wayside hotel known as Gurner's Hotel, I believe. As the crow flies, what is the distance between those two points?
About 16 miles, I'd say.
Since the hotel is on Tintoru property, that is, John Kane's property, how far north of the bore is the boundary fence between those two stations?
4 miles.
Thank you, Mr. Sharp.
Well, if you don't mind, I ought to be pushing on now. I have one or two things to do, you know.
Oh, surely you are not finished for the day now. You do not start your night watch until 10 o'clock, do you?
No.
Well, I have one or two more questions yet.
Oh, very well.
Tell me, please, is there a track from the bore to Gurner's Hotel?
Yes. But it's very rough and seldom used. There's no gate in the boundary fence, so we have to unhook and re-hitch the wires to get through.
A slightly unconventional but convenient method. Now that night, the night Captain Loveacre's aeroplane was burnt, you were at Faraway Bore, am I right?
Yes.
Where did you sleep?
At Faraway Bore, of course.
Yes, yes, but did you sleep inside or outside the hut?
Outside. It was a fairly warm night.
Pardon my persistence, but just where did you sleep?
This side of the hut. There was a light northeast wind that night.
Let me see. That would be the side farthest from Emu Lake.
Yes.
How very strange that you did not hear the explosion.
What explosion?
When the aeroplane blew up. I should imagine the explosion of an aeroplane's petrol tanks would make a fairly loud noise.
No, we didn't hear anything. It was 8 miles away, you know.
Still, it was possible for you to have heard the explosion. If you had done so, we should at least have been able to establish the time.
The blacks heard nothing, so I could be hardly expected to.
Where did they sleep?
I had a tent close by.
And Ned Hamlin?
Inside the hut.
Are you a heavy sleeper?
Oh, good heavens, no. I've done too much droving for that. You can't afford to sleep heavily when you're with cattle.
Then I cannot understand why you heard nothing.
You want to realize that 8 miles is 8 miles.
I understand that perfectly. Please excuse these apparently stupid questions. Now tell me about the people at Gurner's Hotel. What kind of a man is Gurner?
Oh, Gurner's all right in his way. He thinks himself a cut above us working men, you know. It has been said of him that he's not above taking more than he's legally entitled to from a man's check. I don't believe it myself.
Personally, I've never handed a check over to him over the bar with instructions to be told when it was cut out.
A very foolish scheme, I would think.
Yes, a mug's game if the publican happens to be crooked.
Do the men patronize Gurner's Hotel much?
Well, most of them prefer the hotel at Golden Dawn. But there are no police near Gurner's, you know.
Of course, that would be quite an important advantage.
Yes, it is.
Have you seen the young lady who was found in the aeroplane?
Yes. I looked in once to see if I knew her or not.
I see. Where were you the night before the aeroplane was destroyed? The night, in fact, when it was stolen from Golden Dawn?
At Faraway Bor. Or rather, I was there part of the time.
Indeed.
Yeah, I say, what's the idea of putting all these questions to me? You don't suspect me of stealing or destroying that plane?
Not that you stole the aeroplane, Mr. Sharpo, no. But it is my business definitely to nail down like butterflies on a sheet the exact positions of everyone on those vital nights.
All right.
Where did you spend part of that night away from Faraway Bor?
I left the place at 1 o'clock to visit Mitchell's Well.
Where's that?
South of Faraway Bor. The weather had been quiet, and I wanted to see if the windmill had raised enough water to the tanks to last the stock for 3 days. You see, the next day we were shifting cattle for the drovers to take over.
What time did you get back?
Oh, about one.
Ah, yes. I remember seeing Mitchell's Well on the map. You heard no sound of an aeroplane?
Not a sound.
How did you go to Mitchell's Well? On horseback?
No. My runabout truck.
Did you sleep that night in the same place as the night following?
Yes.
All right then, Mr. Sharp. That's all for the present. I see Mr. Nettlefold's outside in the car waiting for me.
I don't envy your drive to Faraway Bor this time of night.
Still, it has been to be done. I have no doubt I shall come back richer in clues than when I went away.
I wish you the best of luck, Mr. Bonaparte.
I should imagine the Diamantina is pretty dangerous when it is flooded, Mr. Nettlefold.
You're right, it is, Bernie.
You have a telephone line running down the river from one station to the next, I believe.
Yes, it's the only way we can get warning of floods.
Is it a private line?
Oh, no, the station pay rent for it to the postal department.
Then you can communicate from one household to another without doing so through the exchange at Golden Dawn.
Yes, there's also the usual private line connecting the stockman's hut with my homestead. As a matter of fact, I rang up Ted Hamlin before I left.
I understand now. One line direct to Golden Dawn, another to the different stations, and a third to your own huts.
Yes.
Tintoroo is the nearest station, is it not?
Yes. I know John Kane fairly well.
Oh, yes, the ex-flying officer. Please tell me what you know about him.
Well, old man Kane had two sons, John and Charles. I didn't know Mrs. Kane. She died before I came out here. Before the war, both boys were wild as kangaroos. And early in 1914, when John was 21 and Charles 20, Charles ran away with a Golden Dawn school teacher and married her. Old Kane probably cut him out of the will.
I suppose John was then the sole legatee.
For a while, yes, until he joined up with the AIF, when he was cut out too. John was transferred to the Air Force and did very well until he got a German bullet to the leg. When he came back to Queensland, he found Charles and his father more or less reconciled, and then another will was made out, leaving the property to both sons again.
It would seem that the old man did not know his own mind.
No, he chopped and changed several times more before he died. Then in 1920, Charles and his wife were killed in a car smash near Sydney, and John quarreled with his father and went up to Cape York Peninsula with a missionary.
Did he stay there long?
About 2 years. He took a great interest in anthropology while he was up there, and it seems to have fascinated him from then on. He wrote a book about the Aborigines and gave a few lectures here and there.
Did he ever marry?
No, he's not the marrying sort. He drinks a bit too now and then. He's never really settled down.
A little erratic from what I have heard of him.
Yes, he's a queer customer. There's plenty of money, you know. He entertains quite a bit.
What type of people?
Oh, sometimes a flash crowd from Brisbane, and other times genuine anthropologists and professors of one sort or another.
A strange mixture. A man capable of anything, one might say.
Exactly. He drives his car like a madman, sacks all his hands one day and re-engages them the next. Runs his station very efficiently, and yet wastes time in 1,000 different ways.
I would very much like to meet him.
Oh, I expect you will. He calls at Coolabah occasionally, though he's inclined to think himself a cut above us.
Tintoroo is a very large station, is it not?
Yes, but he owns another one at Garth, some way north of Tintoroo. It's not a large place, first-class country and well-watered. I got my agent to make him an offer, but he flatly refused to let me have it, because the year before we had a dispute over some unbranded cattle. That's the type of man he is.
Is there any ill feeling now?
None whatsoever.
Then he still has the property.
Yes, he had several offers for it, but he refused these because he thought they were made on my behalf.
A very peculiar man. Do I understand that the wound he received during the war stopped him from flying?
Oh, I don't think so. He walks with a slight limp, but that's all. Dr. Knowles will be able to tell you all about him.
By the way, Knowles is not an Australian, is he?
No, an Englishman. His early life is a complete mystery. Excellent fellow. Pity he drinks so much.
Indeed it is. I wonder why he does. He's not really the drinking type.
No, not a bit.
Oh, is that a hut I can see ahead of us?
Yes, we're at Faraway Bore now. It won't be as comfortable as the homestead, I'm afraid.
I'm not expecting that. I was born to the bush, you remember. I am only half civilized for that matter, Mr. Nettlefold.
Then I have yet to see the other half, Bernie. Ah, here we are.
Oh, there's a man standing in the doorway. Would that be Ned Hamblin?
Yes, that's him. Ned! Ned!
Good night, Mr. Nettlefold.
Come over here, Ned. I want to introduce you to Inspector Bonaparte.
Good night, Mr. Bonaparte.
Good night, Ned. I would be very much obliged if you would call me Boney.
Good now, then, Boney. The billy's boiling, Mr. Nettlefold. You'll come in for a cup of tea.
Thanks, Ned. I will.
I feel sure, Ned, you and I will get on well together.
Oh, too right we will. So you're a policeman, eh? Well, I suppose there could be better policemen than old Cox, and worse, too.
Bernie will be staying a few days, Ned. There's a box of stores on the carrier.
Good owl, Mr. Nettlefold. Come inside that, will you?
I do not think you will find me a worse policeman than Sergeant Cox, Ned. In confidence, I am not a real policeman at all.
Ain't you now? Well, I'm mighty glad to hear that. Old Cox ain't a bad sort, but he gets officious when me and Larry the Lizard gets into Golden Dawn.
Well, that's his duty, Ned.
Ah, well, let's go in and have a drink of tea. Ready, Mr. Nettlefold?
Sure.
Good, Al. Come along in.